Well, thank you for that introduction. And, you know, you can tell I'm retiring because people are starting to say nice things about me. But also, I want to thank Ian, too, for organizing this, such a good idea to organize this series. On the evening of the 4th of August, 1914, a crowd estimated at 3,000 gathered in front of the Leader Building on Hamilton Street in downtown Regina. Shortly after 9 o'clock, the news came over the wire that the British Empire was at war with Germany. The crowd erupted in cheering and patriotic song. A gentleman of Danish descent stood on the platform in front of the Leader Building and gave an impromptu speech in which he said it was the duty of all Canadians, including those who were not of British descent, to defend the flag that gave them their rights and freedom. Bud Protich, a Serb, who was employed as a translator at the police court, also addressed the crowd. He said it was his intention to fight for Britain because it had come to the aid of Serbia when it was attacked by Austria-Hungary. A few days after the war broke out, a young man who is described as Germanic in appearance, although he was in fact an Englishman, stood in front of the Leader Building reading the news bulletins. A brass band struck up God Save the King, and the young man, absorbed in his reading, failed to take off his hat. The person standing next to him took offense and knocked it off. The Englishman tried to explain that he meant no disrespect, but before he could get the words out, a third man shouted, "He's a German," and slapped his face. The Englishman made a run for the police station, where he was protected from the mob. Thus we can see that from the beginning of the war, tensions ran high between British and non-British elements of the population. While severe injustices occurred, the situation was not as dire as it was in Europe and, as Ian just mentioned, Turkey. Saskatchewan emerged from the war with its social fabric not irretrievably damaged. The threat of ethnic conflict worried Premier Walter Scott, who was in Saskatoon when the war broke out, and witnessed patriotic demonstrations similar to those in Regina. Bands played, crowds sang, and a torchlight procession made its way through the streets. "It astonished me," Scott remarked, "that news of that kind should make people lighthearted." Although he expressed the conventional sentiments, there was restraint in his tone. While others rejoiced in the call to arms, he observed bleakly that war was the blackest of all crimes. Of the three great disasters that could befall the human race, war, pestilence, and famine, he said that war was the worst because it led inevitably to the other two. Scott was concerned about the internal cohesion of the province. In the years leading up to the war, hundreds of thousands of continental European immigrants had come into the country at the invitation of the government to take up farms and do the heavy labor required to build railroads and develop the natural resource industries. Many of these new Canadians were recently arrived from countries that Canada was now fighting against. Scott urged his fellow citizens to avoid saying anything that might be offensive to any of the countries involved in the trouble. When it became clear that the war had not sparked the outbreaks of ethnic violence that Scott had feared, he issued a public statement congratulating his fellow citizens for their good behavior. They had not allowed old world rivalries to tear the province apart. President Walter Murray of the University of Saskatchewan made a statement calling upon the students to respect the feelings of their fellow citizens who had come to Canada from enemy countries. The latter, he said, must in turn respect the feelings of British Canadians, who just as naturally sympathized with the Allies. Murray suggested that the motto of Saskatchewan should be bear and forbear. He said it was the secret of the success of the British Empire that it gained strength through tolerance. It is a great thing, gentlemen, Murray said, to belong to an empire that stands for such things. The population of Regina, according to the 1911 census, was just over 30% foreign-born, meaning born in a country not under the British flag. By this definition, a person born in Britain or in some other part of the British Empire was not a foreigner. In Regina, the foreign-born population was concentrated in an area known as Germantown, east of Broad and west of Winnipeg Street, with the railway tracks to the north and College Avenue to the south. The district was ethnically diverse, including Germans, Ukrainians, then referred to as Ruthenians, Galicians, or Austrians, Romanians, Bulgarians, Russians, Belgians, Danes, Finns, Greeks, Dutch, Icelandic, Italians, Norwegians, Swedes, Chinese, Syrians, Turks, and even a few British who lived in Germantown. 2 days before the war broke out, a leader reporter visited Germantown interviewing the residents. He found little sympathy for Austria-Hungary among the Austrians he talked to. One said, "I am a Canadian. I own my home and lot. I have property worth $20,000. Why should I go back and help bolster up a government that never did anything for a poor man?" The Regina police assigned extra men to maintain order in Germantown, but it turned out their services were not required. The neighborhood remained largely peaceful. The first contingent left Regina for the front on the 23rd of August, 1914, and the second on the 31st of August. The second contingent consisted of 250 men, of whom 5 were Americans, 63 Canadians, that is, born in Canada, 144 English, 1 French-Canadian, 5 Irish, 2 Russian, 1 New Zealander, 30 Scots, 1 South African, and 4 Welsh. At this time, the Jewish community affirmed its loyalty. Mrs. H.M. Hillman, the president of the Hebrew Ladies Benevolent Society in Regina, stated, "We have become Canadian despite the fact that most of us are foreign-born. We shall shirk no duty. We shall be found among the first to offer not only our sons for the defense of the great empire, but we will do all we can to cooperate with others for the complete success of the men who have been chosen to fight for us at the front." The War Measures Act imposed special requirements on enemy aliens, that is, those who were not naturalized and therefore not a British subject, and had immigrated from a country that Canada was now fighting against, namely Germany, Austria-Hungary, Bulgaria, and Turkey. In 1914, an estimated 80,000 to 120,000 enemy aliens were living in Canada. They had to present themselves for registration, surrender their firearms, and report to the registration office once a month. If they failed to do so, they could be placed in an internment camp and treated essentially as prisoners of war. The number of enemy aliens registered in Regina rose to 800 by the end of December 1914, with more names added daily. Most were classified as Galicians or Romanians, but there were also 60 Germans and 3 Turks. Inspector Belcher, who had been appointed registrar for the district, sent a police officer into Germantown to round up suspects. He came across a party of 5 Galicians and asked them whether they had registered. They replied that it was Christmas and they were celebrating. So they were on the Julian calendar, so they were celebrating 2 weeks after the other Christmas. "Well, how long does it last?" the constable inquired. "Maybe 1 week, maybe 2," was the answer. The policeman took the men into custody and they were sent to the internment camp at Brandon. Altogether in Canada, 8,579 men, 81 women, and 156 children were interned. Of these, 2,009 were German, 5,954 from Austria-Hungary, mainly Ukrainian, 205 Turks, 99 Bulgarians, and 312 classified as miscellaneous. This represents between 7 and 11% of the enemy alien population. Most of the administration records were destroyed, but it is clear from the evidence that survives that procedures were arbitrary and unjust. Many people were interned who should not have been. The internment camps were used as a place for unemployed laborers who were victims of the 1913 recession. Since the local poor relief authorities did not want to look after them, they were sent to camps where they lived in harsh conditions and were forced to do heavy labor. This is the worst thing that happened to the non-British in the war, the camps, and people died in those camps because the conditions were so harsh.